Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. With every kernel, every grain, every seed, ADM sees possibilities to improve everyday life. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's January the 31st, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain. She's in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with the details from this morning's USDA briefing on the Bush administration's farm bill proposal. And then we'll follow that up with some analysis. We'll have a conversation with University of Illinois farm policy expert Bob Thompson. Oh, and don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, Drew Lerner will join us. He's with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. It all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Taking a look now at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange on this Wednesday afternoon. The settlement prices from the Chicago Board of Trade like this. The March contract at 467.5 in the wheat pit, 8 cents higher. May futures were up 7.75 at $4.81. March corn futures, 404, they were down 3/4. The May off a half at 415.75. In July, unchanged at $4.22.5. September's were down 3 cents at 404.5. December corn futures of 07, 394.75 for your new crop, down 3 cents. March soybean futures, 719.5, down a penny and a half. The May futures off 1.75 at 734.5. And the July futures at 747.75 were down 1.75. November beans down 2.5 cents at 771. March bean meal futures off a dollar at 207.40. March bean oil at 29.34, down 12 cents for the afternoon. From the Mercantile Exchange, March feeder cattle a dollar higher at 95.85. February live cattle at $90.22.5, 30 higher. And the April futures up 55 at 93.17.5. Lean hogs finished the February contract at 64.52.5. They were up 95 cents a hundredweight. From the outside markets, crude oil traded the March contract at 58.15 on the last tick, $1.18 higher. The April up $1.19 at $58.85 a barrel. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 12,649. It's just about 126 points higher for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's good to talk to you this afternoon. Tell me about this market and how you've seen it progress since we started January.
Well, I tell you what, it's been a very unusual month right after the first of the year. We saw the big liquidation by the commodity index funds that scared everybody out of their socks, so to speak. Then we started to see the market stabilize, and we saw the very sharp drop in the U.S. Corn and soybean production. It was the wake-up call that the market needed, and then we're also seeing major changes of policy in China, where they're basically slowing some of their subsidized export sales of corn down, and they continue to be a major importer of soybeans. Chapter two is we're continuing to get reports of this corn acreage expansion, in the Midwest. General speaking, my take of that is that we are seeing probably a pretty good acreage increase in the state of Iowa. To some degree, a little milder increase east of the Mississippi. The general feeling here is that the market is starting to tell me that we're starting to see bull call spreads work. In other words, the nearby is gaining on the deferred. the farmer has been a very aggressive seller in corn, basically sweeping the bins empty. And as a result of that, in time, basis levels will improve, and we continue to see good demand from all three major sectors: export, domestic usage, industrial usage, and, of course, feed usage seem to be all in line. And as a result of that, it augurs well for agricultural commodities across the trading floor.
As you know, I was on the road with the Corn and Soybean Classic hosting that series across the state of Illinois for a couple of weeks in the middle of January. The last one was in Moline. We did poll all the folks across the state. Moline surprised me a bit on the number of acres that they expected to increase in corn. I didn't think it would be as high because it's in the northern part of the state, and that there were more corn already, up 12% there. Are you hearing, you mentioned Iowa, I'm wondering what you're thinking Iowa might come
well,
in.
Well, it's always been my case is that if I ever had to own another 1,000 acres, it'd be north of I-80 in Illinois, and that wonderful, Ottawa, Illinois north. And it's, to me, it's a little easier to raise corn on corn. The nights cool down, they get a little better chance of that July-August rainfall, and people down in the southern center part or southern half of the state. It's always been known that the boys in Iowa like corn. The climate's been generous the last 10 years for those guys to plant corn. The ethanol plants on every 50-mile radius has also encouraged that marketing. And there is this pushing the pencil. And what's so dramatic about that is that you're basically going to plant, I think, 4 or 5 more million acres of corn than you do soybeans. And, of course, when we talk and look at the traditional 50-50 corn-soybean ratio that's so popular in the Midwest, it does change some of those traditional values. And the second thing is that it is amazing that there's still seed corn companies that are still having meetings and still offering triple-stack corn out there. So obviously, some of that's available, but it's unusual what we're hearing. I don't think we're talking, 8.5, 9 million acres of corn at the most. I don't think we're talking 10 or more right now.
And, well, I was thinking, I haven't looked to see what Daryl was thinking about, what the numbers, Daryl Good, would be out of Illinois might be. At one point we were talking about 900,000, but that was a 7.5% increase, so I'm thinking probably it's
well,
more
I think
like
that's
1
what
million.
The old Sparks numbers are, about 900,000 acres increase in Illinois, and that's about, I think, 9%, if I remember right.
Yeah, and then if you go, yeah, it's, I think the average that we picked up out of Illinois, and you'll have to forgive me if this number's not quite right, I think from the 6 sites, we were looking at 9.7% on the increase.
I stand correction. Sparks is using 1.1 million acres increase, and that equates to, as far as a acreage number is concerned, percentage-wise of 10%.
Yeah, that's got to be right at 10%. That's pretty close, I was thinking. So the question is, Iowa's got to come up with a lot of acres, and if they do, or it seems
and
to me,
it's probably close to that 15% area.
If it seems to me that if they do, that the yield might be awfully good. If you look at maps showing where the best yields and most production come from in terms of corn, you'll have to forgive me, but it's a cyclone shape that comes out of Ames and goes right up through the northern part and central part of Iowa and into Minnesota. They produce a lot of corn and awful good yields.
You know, some of those dry weather droughts in the past get awful wicked south of Des Moines and also west of Des Moines, and it can be wicked, and it's one of those deals that we have to remember. I can remember a lot of farm sales from old Ralph raising corn on corn and not the rotation. You know, it's one of those deals that a lot of people have that branded into their brain and remember it pretty well.
You bet. So tell me about the soybean market then over time.
Well, the soybean market, if you're going to have this magic 10 million acres more production of corn, you're going to probably have 7 to 8 million acres less soybeans planted. And guess what? If you're really going to have the big acreage cut, it's going to be in the Corn Belt, let's face it, and that's where that we come up with those kind of numbers. The soybean market was blessed yesterday by seeing dry weather in Argentina, crude oil prices go up, Gulf basis improve. This industrial usage of palm oil into diesel fuel, biodiesel energy, is all major factors. And, of course, the caloric uptake with palm oil and bean oil in those industrial growing countries and India and China is just enormous. The statistic is that a new car is being built every 6 seconds and sold in China, and also their quality of food and their diet's improving enormously.
Paul, we appreciate you being with us today.
Have a profitable day, Todd.
You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons. At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own Mike Solis says tonight across the two-state region, you can expect mostly cloudy skies, some snow in the south, and snow showers and flurries elsewhere. Lows will range from 12 in northwestern Illinois, he says, to 25 in the far south. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies. In southern Indiana, snow showers, mainly early in the day. Elsewhere, scattered flurries. Highs will range from around 20 in northwestern Illinois to 32 in southern Indiana. The winds tomorrow light out of the southern areas. During the afternoon, wind speeds will range between calm in the far south to about 15 miles an hour in the north. The extended forecast, the coldest air of the season, will settle upon the area this weekend. Northwestern Illinois expecting below zero lows Saturday through Monday mornings. The lowest temperatures of around 10 below zero are expected Sunday and Monday mornings.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic Farm Marketing is now holding a series of risk management seminars throughout Illinois and Indiana. Information on seminar dates and locations is available at sfarmmarketing.com or 800-383-0046.
Well, up next, as you probably already know, USDA Secretary Mike Johanns unveiled the Bush administration's Farm Bill 2007 proposal this morning. He did that in Washington, D.C. The proposal contains changes from the current farm bill in several key areas, including commodity payments. The bill would reduce farm programming spending by $18 billion over the next 5 years. AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey reports.
Johanns says the USDA Farm Bill proposal maintains the structure of the current farm bill while trying to be more equitable and predictable for producers.
As farmers said to us, you know, Mike, I can't LDP a crop that I don't raise. And you know what? They're absolutely right. And you know where they got hit twice? What tends to happen is if the crop isn't there, the prices go up. Simple supply and demand phenomena. And guess what happens to the countercyclical? It doesn't kick in.
Johanns proposed a $5.5 billion increase in direct subsidy payments. But unlike in the current farm bill, where subsidies are tied to price and production, subsidies in the new farm bill would be based on revenue. Johanns says a revenue-based safety net will give producers greater protection and likely withstand World Trade Organization challenges.
This safety net will actually work better across the commodities to provide a true safety net. We have actually done comparisons here with those commodities where you can look and say this will work better. Why? Because it's based upon a revenue trigger and not a price trigger. The price trigger is going to deal people out of the safety net when they need it the most.
Johanns also proposed ending commodity program subsidies to producers with an annual adjusted gross income above $200,000. The current cap is $2.5 million. Johanns says lowering the cap would target the top 2.3% of farmers, roughly 80,000 producers, saving the government an estimated $1.5 billion over 10 years. Johanns also proposed elimination of the three-entity rule and a payment limit cap of $360,000. And Johanns suggested that marketing loan rates needed revision, setting rates based on average market price over the last 5 years.
We are going to adjust the loan rates down to more reflect the actual market. How will that happen? This is not a situation of just saying, well, I'm kind of comfortable with this number for corn and that number for soybeans. Not at all. We look at the 5 years of the last farm bill. We take the average price of the commodity for those 5 years, throwing out the top year, throwing out the bottom year, to try to avoid distortion, and take the average price. We then cap that if it becomes necessary by using the loan rate approved by the House of Representatives when they passed the 2002 Farm Bill and sent it to the Senate.
Johannes proposed what he called a conservation-enhanced payment option that would replace commodity support payments like the loan deficiency payment with direct payments for conservation commitments. Johannes says the program will result in less market distortion and more environmental benefits.
They can still grow corn or soybeans or cotton or rice or fruits or vegetables or whatever they're doing out there. And actually, this payment is actually for the commodity title crops. But it may be the perfect fit for that farmer who is raising those program crops to put that farm in and do some of those conservation things that they haven't gotten done. As they look out over the life of this farm bill.
Johannes also proposed keeping dairy and sugar programs that limit supplies to support prices, elimination of a prohibition that prevents fruits and vegetables from being grown on land where subsidized crops are grown, and elimination of commodity program payments on land acquired through a 1031 tax exchange.
I want you to be absolutely clear about something. We're not rewriting the 1031. If you own an apartment building here in Washington and you decide that you want to buy Nebraska ranch land with your profits, great. And if you can shelter that because of the 1031 exchange, great. This doesn't impact that. What we are saying is that if that occurs, that you won't participate in the commodity programs on a going forward basis.
Johannes' farm bill proposal would cost $87.3 billion over the next 5 years, not counting food stamps and other nutrition programs. USDA has spent $105 billion on farm programs over the past 5 years. This is Dave Dickey, AM 580 Agriculture.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. Bob Thompson, ag policy expert at the University of Illinois, joins us from his office in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences this afternoon to give some analysis of the Farm Bill policy discussion that took place in Washington, D.C. this morning. As you just heard, Bob, USDA Secretary of Agriculture, outlining some interesting facts. What did you find when you took a look at it that you found of most interest today?
Well, I found that the Secretary has been listening a lot to what the different farm organizations and non-agricultural organizations have been looking at as they look towards the Farm Bill. One of the features, for example, that they picked up on is the increasing popularity of some kind of a revenue assurance concept, that it's really the product of price times crop yield that matters, or revenue, not just the price or not just the yield. And so it really looks like they're trying to fill in a couple of gaps in the safety net that were left by the present LDPs and countercyclical payments and crop insurance program. There's also a pretty good commitment to conservation that for commodities like corn and beans and wheat, whose prices are pretty high relative to where they've been as a result of the ethanol developments, these direct conservation payments are a way that those farmers can continue getting some benefit from the government, even though their prices are too high to trigger LDPs or countercyclical payments. And the fruit and vegetable industry are big winners in this proposal. They do lose the exclusion that where if you're getting direct payments in this part of the country, you're not allowed to grow fruit and vegetables on the land. That's going to be lifted now, and So you will be able to produce fruits and vegetables, but in exchange, the fruit and vegetable industry is getting $5 billion for increased investment in research and product promotion. And I think that includes a couple billion for getting more fruits and vegetables into school lunch programs. So those are some of the immediate observations I get.
And there were some things for beginning farmers. I think they were releasing $250 million. That a beginning farmer might be able to get in loans, and they would get an extra 20% on their direct payment over 5 years. That might be a good thing, I suppose. Yeah. Did you take a look, and were you able to find anything on the revenue-based and the countercyclical programs? Did you find hard numbers anywhere? The secretary didn't mention anything during his presentation.
I haven't found any place where those are yet, although they've obviously got some hard numbers because they came up with some budget estimates. I did find that they would set the loan rate in the marketing loan program at 85% of a moving average market price, dropping the high and low, an Olympic average, basically arguing that the loan rates had been set in law high enough that it actually stimulated larger production. This is a problem we had, of course, in our cotton program with the WTO case that Brazil took against the United States, and so they're trying to remove the anything that might be inconsistent with the WTO rules so that we minimize the chances of other countries taking cases against us, like the Canadians have initiated on corn in the last couple of weeks.
I'll talk to you again probably tomorrow, I hope, in the morning, after you've had some chances to take a look at this, and we can go through that in my office a bit later. One other question before I let you go for the afternoon. Have you talked to anybody about this $200,000 limit on the adjusted gross income in order to participate in farm programs? How well will that be accepted?
Well, payment limitations have not gone down well any time they've been proposed, and in general, Congress has pretty much knee-jerk rejected them. On the other hand, if you're working off the adjusted gross income, and anybody that has over $200,000 of AGI would not be eligible, you know, that may have enough of a positive populist ring that it might just be able to go through.
Okay, we'll talk to you again tomorrow morning, I hope, and I'll give you a ring a little bit later to set that appointment up. Thanks much.
Okay, bye.
Bob Thompson is Ag Policy Expert at the University of Illinois, joining us here on a Wednesday afternoon. Another person that joins us by phone this afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. Hi, Kay. Oop, I thought Kay should be there. Why is she not up? Oh, I don't have any idea why that's the case, but we'll see if we can bring her up. Kay, are you on? Let me see where we're at. She should be there. I don't know why she's not up.
I'm here.
Oh, you are there. Hi, Kay. you were just being quiet.
No, I answered you once, and then you didn't.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know why that was the case, so that's all right.
Too much going, Todd.
Yeah, too many things happening. Tell me about the cash grain market very quickly.
Well, there's really not a lot going on. You know, we had a little farmer selling today. It kind of goes in spurts. Basis levels are just a tad bit better on the nearby.
Well, that's the way it goes. I'm just going to have to let Kay go bye-bye because I've got two people on the lines, and, well, that's not going to work very well. We'll try to, we'll talk to Kay again next week, and we won't worry about it too much. You are listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is WILL AM 580. We hope you enjoyed part of what we had to discuss on the farm programs, and if you've been signed up for our newsletter, you'll know that you've got a little more information in that. Make sure you subscribe to that on our website at willag.org, and we'll get you more information on the farm policy program discussion from USDA this morning. Time now to take a look at our regional newscast.
And with this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A longtime labor activist has been picked to serve as director of the Illinois Department of Labor. Catherine Shannon has most recently served as the Labor Department's acting director and its legislative director. She'll take over the permanent post immediately. In announcing the appointment, Governor Blagojevich said Shannon brings extensive policy experience to the job. Shannon says she's a union member and labor advocate who will work to ensure fair wages and healthy work environments for the state's workers. The winter storm that downed trees and power lines across much of Illinois last year carried a hefty price tag. State officials say it cost Illinois about $19.5 million to clean up the extensive damage in the storm's aftermath. Altria Group says it'll spin off its Kraft Foods unit in March. The announcement by the company, which also owns cigarette maker Philip Morris, has been widely anticipated as the first step in a restructuring plan that's designed to increase shareholder value. Kraft operates a major production facility in Champaign. The unit reported lower fourth-quarter earnings today. A proposed constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage in Indiana has advanced to the floor of the Republican-controlled state Senate. The Senate Judiciary Committee voted 7-4 today along party lines to send a resolution on the amendment to the full chamber. An Indiana Senate panel has sent to the full Senate a watered-down version of a bill that would have authorized vaccinating most sixth-grade girls against a sexually transmitted disease that can cause cervical cancer. The bill now calls for just informing parents about the virus and the availability of a vaccine. A federal environmental grant will let the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District test a new kind of pollution-reducing muffler. The University of Illinois helped start the grant process because it's in search of reducing pollution and noise from diesel engines in the campus area. The MTD's maintenance director says four buses will be fitted with the diesel oxidation catalyst, which would turn more pollution-causing particulates into ash when the engine reaches high temperatures. And officials in the Chicago suburb of Robbins are working to turn a defunct incinerator in their town that was built to burn garbage into a green power plant. The town's mayor says the plant would turn wood chips into energy and would attract industries that want to be near a source of electricity. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now to take a look at the agricultural weather on a Wednesday afternoon is Drew Lerner, the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Boy, cold weather has arrived in the Midwest, especially in the state of Illinois.
That's right, and it's going to be here for a while, all the way through the weekend. It's going to be downright nippy out there. It's not just Illinois, but all of the Midwest and the plains, even the southeastern states, will be involved with this eventually. Our temperatures are probably going to get down to the damage threshold for wheat areas, but the good news is that there should be some sufficient amount of snowfall on the ground, snow cover on the ground, to protect most of the crops across the area. There's going to be a little bit of a threat for some blowing snow around before the coldest air arrives that might blow a few fields free of snow, but I just don't think it's going to be a real big issue. I think winter kill is not going to be a major threat for the majority of U.S. crops this particular time around. But it's definitely going to be cold, be very stressful for livestock. It's going to be an issue for travel across the region as we see waves of snow move through the region. And we'll all be dreaming about warmer weather coming up. But we did have to pay for all that warmth we had in November and December, and I think that's what's going on right now.
I saw an early morning temp of about 6 degrees, mid-morning today, about 10 degrees above that. Are there colder temps still yet to come?
There are. I think late in the weekend and early next week, we may see somewhat similar temperatures, but a little bit colder. Our nighttime lows will probably drop below zero all the way down into central Missouri, maybe central portions of Illinois and central Indiana. Those temperature extremes probably won't be more than just the minus single digits, but it will be colder than it was this morning. And further to the north, we will see temperatures as cold as minus 25 near the Canadian border, so definitely an impressive cold air mass, at least for recent winters. We do expect the cold to persist in the eastern one-third of the country through most of next week, but the plains and the western portions of the Corn Belt will start to see some warming as we go into the middle to latter part of next week. So relief is in the pipeline. Unfortunately, when we start to get the warmer air coming, we may generate a new winter storm as well. So kind of yucky weather around for a while.
Your assessment of the South American weather and how it's impacted crops there?
I think things are looking still pretty good across both Brazil, southern Brazil, and most of Argentina. There are pockets of dryness in Argentina, but I think there's only a few people out there that believe that there's any kind of an issue coming up. Most likely, we will run into some net drying in this first week of the forecast for Argentina. The second week, we'll see some shower and thunderstorm activity occur. It'll slow down drying rates, but it is midsummer, and that will still allow for some net drying to occur, even though we do get some showers going. But no critically dry conditions in Argentina are expected. In Brazil, of course, we've had that persistent rain issue going on in some of the center-south production area, southern Minas Gerais, portions of Sao Paulo, and southernmost Goiás, and easternmost sections of Mato Grosso do Sul have all seen really too much rain for the majority of the summer. But it's not necessarily a critical issue. We have shaved off maybe a little bit of yield, but we have excellent crop conditions in southern portions of Brazil and also in Mato Grosso, and I think the end result is that they'll still have a very good production year.
Thanks, Drew. We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, and have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets, and don't forget, you can always listen to today's futures analysis, the cash grain analysis, and the weather right there on our website. Just go to willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. I'm Todd Gleason.